Hey everyone, David Chen here. Kim and I are trying something different today. We're doing a Twitter space that's going to have our immediate and live reaction to this week's episode of House of the Dragon in advance of our fully refined recap episode tomorrow. If you don't know what Twitter spaces are, they're basically live audio rooms on Twitter where people can have a conversation while others listen in and tweet in response. Just to note, the audio is rougher than a usual podcast, and our thoughts are also a little bit more raw than the final episode. This is really just for those who watch the show on Sunday nights and want to hear a conversation about the show as soon as possible. I will be making these Twitter spaces available as podcast recordings to members of DecodingTV.com. Sign up to support us there. And thanks to everyone who makes this podcast possible. I am making this first one available for free to everyone as a podcast episode. Enjoy and stay tuned for our full episode tomorrow.
Good evening, everyone. It's me, David Chen. I'm the host of The Cast of Kings. And we are doing a Twitter space reaction to episode 2 of season 1, The Rogue Prince. I'm here with the author of the unofficial guide to Game of Thrones, Kim Renfro. How's it going this evening, Kim?
It's going great. I love being back in like the Sunday night rush of seeing everybody absorb and talk about new episodes.
So let's talk about this week's episode, The Rogue Prince. There's a bunch of stuff to talk about. And of course, these are just our rough thoughts in advance of our full episode tomorrow. But I want to start with the opening credits sequence. We didn't see the opening credits last weekend. This is the first time the opening credits sequence. I was completely stunned by the opening credits sequence, not in a good way necessarily, because they used the existing Game of Thrones opening theme song. Now, but with completely different visuals attached to it.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any sort of understanding of what is going on with those visuals?
I mean, I know that it is basically taking us through the history of House Targaryen, starting in Valyria and like with the Doom of Valyria through to what I believe is supposed to be like current day, basically like King Viserys's reign. Like each of those individual little circles that like floods with blood and then like sinks. I have not quite decoded every single like meaning of those, but I recognize some of them as like, I'm pretty sure that the last one is the crown that Viserys was wearing, like in the tournament scene from the pilot episode and stuff. So, and I definitely recognize like what looks like little, you know, pictographs of like dragons and the Doom of Valyria and Aegon's conquest and stuff. And I'm also pretty sure that it is, we talked about this last week with like the little model that's in King Viserys's room. I originally like at a glance thought that it was just King's Landing, but it's not. It's actually Valyria, and he like explains that in the show. So I think that it's almost like they took that thing from the set and made this like little CGI, oh, you're like soaring through it at miniature length type of thing.
Yeah. So it's just like how in Game of Thrones they eventually found the astrolab that is in the opening credits. Similarly, I guess it was they didn't want to spoil the reveal of the opening credits, I should say they didn't want to spoil the reveal of his model. You know what I'm saying? Like if you had seen the opening credits, you'd be like, oh, I already saw that in the opening credits when his model is revealed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but what did you think of the opening? Like, how did it strike you when you saw the opening credits? Because this is your first time. You didn't see this in the screeners, right?
No, so that was really interesting. Yeah. Like, literally up until Friday when I was watching my press screener, there were no credits in there. And instead, it was like the very beginning and very end of that opening theme song, kind of like weirdly mashed together in a way where I was like, okay, that's obviously not complete. Like, it's just like stand-in music with like the little Targaryen sigil like you saw in episode 1. I really liked the visual. I was like, oh, we're going straight for like, this is a story soaked in blood, like metaphor, really heavy, like heavy-handed. And I don't know, I guess I was surprised that there wasn't new music, but I didn't dislike it. I was like, oh, they're gonna like, presuming that we get more spinoffs, which like, given that this is already so successful and they've already greenlit it for season 2 and like that bodes well for the other prequels that they have in mind. Like maybe they're just going to keep that consistent across the entire franchise. And I don't know. I kind of get that. I don't hate it.
Yeah. I don't know. So I think the visual is great. I don't mind the visual. A lot of blood for opening credits. probably the most blood I've ever seen in an opening credit sequence. Most opening credit sequences are not very bloody, you know, because they most of the time they're pretty family friendly, unless you're like True Detective or something.
Yeah.
But this one, they're just like, hey, guess what? There's going to be a lot of killing in this show. And so it's like, okay, that's fine. And a lot of, you know, blood, like the blood symbolizes blood lines, but it's obviously a very graphic way to make the point.
Yeah.
I am pretty bothered by the fact that they use the original music for two reasons. Mm-hmm. Number one, it feels like it was music written for a different opening theme song, which it was, you know what I mean? Like the feelings that the opening theme song evokes are made complete with the visuals from Game of Thrones. And it just felt like, you know, it kind of an ill-fitting suit. It's like when I listen to that music, I am filled with like awe and wonder. And I'm not saying I had none of that watching these new opening credits.
Yeah.
But it just felt like not quite a match because it wasn't. That being said, I do think it is hilarious to imagine them going to Ramin Djawadi and saying, hey, can you write us a new opening theme song? And he just hands them the score of the original opening credits. And he's like, already did it. Don't need to do it again.
Yeah.
Which, fair enough. I also think it's an open question of if there are more spinoffs, are they all just going to use the same music? Like, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, it's hard to beat one of the greatest opening credit sequences of all time, but like every like show should have its own feel, you know? Anyway, moving along, what did you think of this episode, Kim Renfro?
I loved it.
Tell me what you loved about it.
I think, like, I saw the pilot, I think I had like a week or two between when I got to see the pilot episode as like a press screening to when they released like the additional episodes and stuff. And so like, I didn't really know where they were going to go next. I knew that they had like these time jumps in mind, or like that was kind of like part and parcel with their approach this season. And so I liked that they jumped us ahead, but only by 6 months. So like, okay, cool. We're in like a whole new setting. And I just love that you immediately understand that like everything that Viserys like tried to set up in the ending moments of that pilot episode is like already falling apart because nobody's respecting Rhaenyra. Obviously the episode ends with like the most painful sort of like betrayal of her trust and like peace as a young teenage girl who has like the weight of the realm on her shoulders at this point. And I love that they like did not let up on the fact that like almost every single one of these male characters is just like disregarding these girls. Like Alicent and Rhaenyra are like, I think, trying really hard and to kind of like do their duty, but they are simply not being allowed to just like live their lives. And I appreciated that the show like immediately really leaned into that tone of like, these men are making messed up choices all the time that have like real consequences for the women in their lives. And it started with Emma dying in childbirth, with which like Miguel Sapochnik described to me as like Viserys effectively murdering her. And then like, it really just doesn't let up on the point that like, these girls know what they're doing and they're smart and they're capable, but like the Westerosi society as it exists at this point in time in this fiction is like incredibly hostile towards any of their well-beings. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I thought that the writing was great. I loved all of like the conversations and the scenes that we're getting. That freaking Dragonstone scene was so beautiful. Like a dawn, like misty castle. I thought like the dragon CGI looked epic. I really liked a lot of it. What did you think?
Well, if you're just tuning in, first of all, I'm David Chen. I'm speaking with Kim Renfro. We host a Cast of Kings podcast. Be sure to listen to the show if you want to hear our fully formed, refined thoughts on the podcast tomorrow. I liked it as well. I'm not quite as hot on it as you are, but I think there are a lot of amazing moments. And I agree with you that I like the way they're kind of building the conflicts this season. It's also great, you know, I was reading Miles McNutt's newsletter, Episodic Medium, and he points out that, like, this is an episode of the show that is told in a linear form, like, mostly linear format, in the sense that, like, one scene leads to the next, as opposed to Game of Thrones, where you'd have multiple different characters in different locations where the stuff is taking place at the same time, right? Or possibly even in different time periods.
You know, yeah, what I mean? Totally.
And so the idea of just kind of like a very self-contained episode is really interesting in the Game of Thrones universe. And I think it really works well. It feels like a nice self-contained story. There are some elements of the execution that I think are really strong and a couple ones that I think are not as strong. And I think primarily it is, I don't know that I feel like these, the relationships between, I'll just be honest. I find the two girl characters, Rhaenyra and Allison, to be a little bit inscrutable in terms of kind of, like how Allison feels about the whole thing. Basically, Rhaenyra is much more clear. Like, she's clearly very bothered at the end, and you know, I get all, and it's, and I think the show has done enough to lay track for like, oh, they were really good friends and possibly more than friends, you know, and then I understand why she'd be bothered by that. But like, I don't really know how Allison feels about the whole thing. Am I off base in saying that, or do you feel like, oh, it was extremely clear? Like, what are you thinking?
I think that you're picking up on something that was intentional in these first couple of episodes. I had the chance to speak with Emily Carey and Millie Alcock. I had only seen the first episode when the roundtable interview was happening. But Emily Carey said something along the lines of like, Allison doesn't quite like, she kind of gets what's happening when her father sends her to the king's room, but like, she isn't totally sure of like exactly how she's supposed to behave or like what is correct and not. And so like, I think that she's kind of, she's going along with all of like the niceties that she's learned about how to be like a good lady of the court, but like, she's not herself scheming at this, like in all of those scenes, you know, but there is supposed to be a certain amount of like discomfort and a little bit of like, what the hell is going on here? Because like, she's a girl who's been sent by her father to go like keep her best friend's father company and like keep his spirits up in his grief. And I think that she's very good at doing that and very good at like being polite, but we see that she's like shredding her own fingernails and like literally bleeding underneath the table because she's clearly like anxious about this situation. And that look on her face when Viserys is like, you don't talk to Rhaenyra about us, do you? And I'm like, like, bro, if you have to say that, then you know that you're doing something weird and like uncomfortable. And so yeah, I think that we're kind of seeing that like Alicent is a character almost kind of like Sansa was in the early seasons of Game of Thrones, who like knows how to play her part as like a noble woman at court when she's this young, but like is young enough that she doesn't have agency over what's really happening to her and like the situation that she's being put in. And that does kind of, yeah, make it a little hard to read.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of just wish I understood how she felt about this. I guess, like, you know, the fact that she's picking her nails, like, that's a good... She did that the other time when she was worried about those people getting completely obliterated during the tournament, you know, so that's, like, a good sign. But, like, the way she... When the king says to her, like, I'm thinking of getting married, and she's like, oh, I'm sure that will be great, and she's going to love your company just as I do, like... I could read that scene in either way. Like either she's actually sad that he's going to get married or that she's trying to be like, yes, good. I'm gently encouraging you in that direction. So you take your focus off of me, you know, kind of thing. I think it's a little bit, I wish I kind of had more insight into like what she was thinking. On the other side, you know, I do think like we do have a pretty clear idea of what Rhaenyra's thinking. And she's awesome in this episode. In fact, she's so awesome this episode that I actually got sad because I feel like we're not going to have that many more episodes with her, you know, like, my understanding is we're going to see older Rhaenyra at some point this season. I don't know when, but like once we make that jump, I doubt we're going to come back to young Rhaenyra again. And that's a bummer because I think she's really crushing it in this.
Yeah.
World. Yeah. I also think that the central, sort of premise of this episode is like, which underaged girl is the king going to marry? It feels like a very, you know, it puts the audience in this very weird situation of I'm rooting for the one that doesn't look like she's 10 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
it's there are no winners here, basically. <No. laughs> And so, that was kind of weird as like the central, conflict of this episode. Plus, like, I thought the ending was very, Bachelor-esque. I don't know if you got that feeling as well when he's like, I choose, you know, Alicent Hightower. And then it's like, it's literally like reality TV editing. Like it cuts back and forth between the two of them. And I'm like, okay, this is basically the Bachelor Westeros edition, you know?
You know what I love? I was looking up the director for this episode. His name is Greg Yaitanis, I think.
Yes, which is, I think, his first time directing a Game of Thrones episode or a House of the Dragon Game of Thrones episode.
Yeah, first one. And then I was like scrolling through his other director credits to be like, oh, like, would I know this dude from anything? He directed two episodes of Grey's Anatomy in like 2007 that mm-hmm. I love. And mm-hmm. I feel like as soon as you just said that, I was like, oh, yeah, he knows he's doing the like dramatic reaction shot thing that is kind of like part and parcel with anything dramatic like The Bachelor or like, you know, Grey's Anatomy and stuff. But I loved it because you're like, okay, you like see like both girls' hearts kind of break in that moment. And I think that that kind of helped show that like Alicent did not quite like she wasn't trying to position herself to be her best friend's stepmother, you know?
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So I think that's that scene. I mean, even in that scene though, she was like, again, I still found her to be like a little bit inscrutable in that scene. Mm-hmm. She wasn't, I wouldn't say she was happy or sad. I just felt she was like extremely controlled. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But anyway.
And I think I think that's kind of a key part of her character, right? Is that like the Targaryens kind of get away with a certain amount of like lashing out and being emotional. And obviously like Daemon is like the perfect like example of that. Whereas like Alicent comes from a house and like a sort of like societal conditioning of like, this is how you behave as a lady and you better keep that composure all the time, no matter what, you know? Mm-hmm, and it seems like it almost seems like her picking out her fingernails is like the one like outwardly visible sign that she ever gives that she's uncomfortable. Otherwise she's been very well conditioned to stand there and act like a lady at all times.
Let's talk about any other high points or low points of the episode, Kim Renfro. And if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Kim Renfro. We host the Cast of Kings podcast. Check out the full podcast when it comes out tomorrow to hear our full thoughts. But Kim Renfro, any other highlights or lowlights in this episode?
I mean, once again, I just love Daemon being like a big child. Like he's just like, he's like throwing a fit basically to try and get his brother's attention. And like the staging of that scene and the fact that Rhaenyra is like the only one who can really like call him out on his bluff, I thought was just like more great character building while also giving us like those big, beautiful, sweeping cinematic shots that Game of Thrones was always so good at. I loved that scene. And like the way that he just like tosses the egg back to her and
it seemed like he was violating proper egg handling protocols, I think, in that scene.
Yeah, you know? Just flouting the rules every way possible.
I thought the updated Dragonstone, like the Dragonstone reveal was incredible. Like just really good CG. Like it looks so incredible when they kind of, it's like this helicopter CG shot that reveals the fullness of Dragonstone. It looks so uninviting and fortress-like. Mm-hmm. I really love that.
Yeah. I thought that was great. I loved the conversation between Rhaenys and Rhaenyra, where like we finally get that, you know, the line from the trailer of like, men would sooner put the realm to torch than see a woman ascend the Iron Throne. It reminds me, did you see Little Women, Greta Gerwig's Little Women?
I did see Greta Gerwig's Little Women. Great movie.
I love that movie so much. And I love, like, there's this monologue that Saoirse Ronan's character gives about like women, they have minds as well as hearts. And like, it was like used in the trailer as like this big, like, yeah, feminism moment. And then like, but in the movie, she ends that speech by saying like, but I'm so lonely. And it's like, it just lands even better, even though like you kind of had seen it already in the trailer. And I felt the same way about this conversation where like that one line pulled aside, I was like, okay, yeah, that's pretty to the point of like what this entire show is kind of like circling around, is like the tension between tradition in Westeros versus what people are attempting to have be a first, which is like a woman to sit on the Iron Throne. And I thought like having that line and then ending it with your father is no fool was like an equal kind of like stinger of like, it recontextualizes it, right? Like, she's not just making that point to make that point. She's making that point to Rhaenyra to say like, and you're being set up to fail, basically. Which I think you see in most of the actions of Viserys in this. Like, he does not come to her defense at all when all the other men are trying to like basically shush her up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was a big miscalculation to make her the cup bearer in the small council. Like, that she like apparently keeps that job after she's the heir. Like,
right.
You need to, you know, I don't know if that's true in the book as well, or if that is even noted, but you need people to not see that person as a servant, you know?
Right. Like have her be the cupbearer, but actually listen to her when she decides to weigh in, as mm-hmm. opposed to like mm-hmm. shutting her up and go find an activity that like isn't so meddlesome, little girl. And it's like, this is your named heir to the frickin' throne. Like, mm-hmm. yeah. And then even later in private, when she tries to apologize, he's like, oh, you'll learn, you're young. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay. Big extra F you to Viserys. That dude sucks.
It's giving Logan Roy, Shiv Roy vibes, mm-hmm. if you've seen that show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It reminds this whole sequence of like men would rather torch the kingdom than see a woman on the Iron Throne. It reminds me of this article that Alexandra Petrie wrote in March of 2020. The article is entitled, "So 2148 was a bust, but next time a woman runs for president will be different." And it takes place in the year 2148, and she opens, "Too bad. Look, there was once again a problem with the female candidate. I'm very sorry about it. We sure have had a bad run of luck with these candidates. I would have said 10 years ago that there would be no way Cyborg Dave would be president before a human woman, and that Armored Bob would be president 6 times, but that just shows why I'm so highly compensated as a pundit. I'm always surprised, and people love to see it." But the good news is there are a lot of women who are already getting my hopes up for 2152. And so, anyway.
That's really interesting because Eve Best, who plays Rhaenys, so the older woman, that character's kind of like nickname is the Queen Who Never Was. Also, around the same time that I was doing like roundtable interviews, I spoke with her, and she specifically said that she thinks about her character as being kind of like Hillary Clinton, of like this woman who's like got passed over for the chance to lead, and then has to like maintain public appearances about like being perfectly fine, is kind of the way that she described it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah,
yeah, yeah. Somebody is responding to this space on Twitter saying, Kyle writes, quote, "The staging of that final scene is awkward with Alicent there. She has no reason to be there. So the announcement of the matter, or the matter of fact reactions by the small council that she's there, felt a bit strange. One of the only false steps of the episode for me." End quote. I agree. Like, I was like, why is Alicent there? Like, what's the purpose of her being there? That doesn't really make any sense. Did you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I think I saw that as like, I definitely made a note of that, of being like, why would nobody have any questions about this? But I think like earlier in the episode, you see Viserys and like Viserys and Alicent are alone together, and he gets called to the small council, and it's like, and then he has to basically just like leave her there. So I thought that like actually like having that be the segue for that scene of like how to get him back into the small council room for, I think that it was to be told that the egg had been taken and like leave Alicent behind, was then supposed to make you kind of perk up when you saw her in the room at the end of the episode. So that like we were supposed to be going like, wait, what the hell is she doing there now? And like maybe put the pieces together before Viserys said it out loud. Mm. And I guess I agree that like I'm not sure why the other small council members wouldn't have said anything, but like that just made me think like, oh, Otto absolutely knows what's happening right mm-hmm. now. Like he brought his daughter. It was like, bring your daughter to work day and then marry her off to your 50-year-old boss.
I really loved the last 5 minutes of the episode where like Otto kind of acknowledges it to Corlys. He kind of mm-hmm. gives this ever so slight smile to Corlys, like, I beat ya.
Yeah.
And then Corlys having the conversation with Daemon at the end, and mm-hmm. kind of this very ominous ending. You sense that the king has made a very terrible strategic decision that will come to haunt him.
Yeah.
I love that they basically make the point 3 or 4 separate times during the course of the episode via multiple different people that it is a good idea for him to marry Corlys's daughter, and he doesn't do it, you know?
Yeah, like he keeps trying to find someone who will tell him what he wants to hear, which is like, oh, why don't you marry that other teenager that you have a crush on? And no one does it because it's a bad idea. And then he does it anyways because he's like, I don't know, just following his heart, even though his heart is creepy.
Well, at least he's showing some initiative, you know, unlike in the last episode. So
I guess.
We have to talk briefly about Sonoya Mizuno's accent. What did you think of that, Kim?
Other than
it being one of the worst things to ever happen to this show. What did you think of it?
I just, like, in every episode notebook that I have, like, every time that I've been taking notes and watching these screeners, every time that she's on screen, I just write down the question, like, what is this? Like, what choice was being made here? Because I'm really not clear on it. And she hasn't really been doing a lot of, like, interviews and stuff, but I would love to hear from her or, like, a director or someone about, like, how did they land on that choice? Because as we've talked about before on our Cast of Kings podcast, she's British. In real life, so like, yeah, I'm not sure what the move was there.
To me, it feels like they are like hanging this actress out to dry. I have to say, like,
yeah,
I feel bad for Sonoya Mizuno, who I think is an enormously talented actor, and it will now become the source of mockery because of this accent. I think because it is very bad.
In universe, her character is supposed to be from somewhere in Essos. Yes. Either, I mean, she says in this, they seem to have like written it where one of her lines in this episode is like, I've been sold so many times that like, I can't even remember what my home country was or something like that. So like they've made her like unplaceable in the world by like making, in the books, she's from Lys, which is one of the cities in Essos and stuff. So like, yeah, having some sort of like Asian influenced, like, I don't know, language or like anything invented in there, I feel like would have been plausible, but instead they're having her do like, yeah, an accent that is entirely unplaceable and
virtually incomprehensible.
I'm like, we shouldn't have to I mean, I love watching TV with captions. Yes, I do it same. All the time, but like, I shouldn't have to because someone is performing with an accent that makes a lot of their words and their communication like harder to read.
Henry Alexander Kelly responds, it's a Jamaican French Latino accent, end quote, which yeah. I think sounds about right to me. Yeah, that feels right to me.
There's definitely some Jamaican islands somewhere in Westeros, Planetos.
I'm trying to think of anything else. I do think, like, I don't know who they cast as Liana, I think, is Corliss's daughter, right? But, like...
Lena.
But it feels like they, like, cast her purposely, like, extremely young, or at least way younger than Alicent, even though I think in age they're not that different, right? I think they're supposed to be only 2 years difference.
Yeah,
but it looks 12. Like it's four... Yeah, it's 12 to 14, but it looks like it's, like, 4 to 6 years difference, to be honest.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit extreme, which like, well, not extreme. She definitely like, it's like she's supposed to be so visibly still a child that you like understand why Viserys is uncomfortable. Whereas like Emily Carey and in like the costuming for Alicent does seem a little bit older, but like, I mean, her dad still had to be like, oh, go wear one of your mother's sexier dresses, like, while you talk to the king. Like, if you look at the way that she was dressed in the pilot episode before this, she was much more, like, I think, in sort of, like, you know, high school territory of, like, the equivalent and stuff.
Yeah.
A much more, like, modest neckline and, like, you know, little pastel clothes. Now she's in these, like, rich jewel-toned clothes that have all these cutouts on them and is wearing like more jewelry and stuff so that she looks a little bit older. But like, I think that you are still supposed to feel just as uncomfortable about Viserys choosing to marry someone who is his daughter's peer. Like that's right. Just, that should always feel uncomfortable. But of course, within this messed up arranged marriage situation that Westeros has going on, it's like a little more palatable to be marrying a like 14-year-old, I guess, but like I don't think that we, the audience, are supposed to be like, oh, well, it's fine because she's clearly not like as young as Lena.
I agree with you. It's just weird that they didn't age those characters up a little, like Alicent and Rhaenyra up a little bit, you know?
I think that that's intentional though, because you're supposed to understand that what's happening to them is like emotionally traumatizing of like, yeah. They aren't old enough for this yet, and yet they're being forced into these positions. I think that that's the stance that the show is taking. Yeah, whereas books are much more like, oh, well, this was totally just the norm. And so, of course, everything was fine. Like, you know?
I love your fire and blood impression, Kim. It's amazing.
Thanks.
I think it's just weird for the reasons that you pointed out to me, you know, which is that, like, there seems like such a stark contrast in age between these characters. Like, Emily Carey is like 19 in real life. And that other character looked like she was probably like 10. So, yeah. So it felt like, it basically felt like the show was not, you know, playing fair when it came to making its points, I guess is kind of what I'm trying to say. A little bit.
But, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I, an article on this is already up if anyone wants to find it. I think I just tweeted it out like a little while ago, but I asked Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik about all the age, like the age choices, particularly for like Daemon, Alicent and Rhaenyra. And he specifically said that, the reason why there are two different actors who will be playing basically every child, he called them true children. Mm-hmm. Every character who is a true child, meaning like under the age of 18, is going to be played by two different sets of actors. And I think that that's supposed to like help us understand also like the inappropriateness of this, right? Of like the fact that we're going to see a very, very young Rhaenyra, like 14-year-old Rhaenyra, played wonderfully by Millie Alcock. And then like eventually when that jumps to Emma Darcy playing Rhaenyra, and then seeing the same old men around her, it's going to be like, Jesus, like these women have like lived a lifetime already.
Right, yeah.
With these dudes who are so much older than them.
That part I think is interesting, you know, that they're doing it that way. So, any other thoughts, Kim Renfro? If you're just tuning in, I'm David Chen speaking with Kim Renfro from Cast of Kings, and we're doing a quick reaction before our full episode comes out tomorrow. Closing thoughts, Kim?
I think the last thing that I'll say that I loved about this episode is that music cue that Rhaenyra has. Like, talk about Ramin Djawadi and like, yeah, I am a little bit sad that maybe we didn't get like a whole new rendition for opening credits, but like I love what he's doing with being able to create new music themes for characters. And Rhaenyra's like that little like choral like sound that comes in where it's like you completely believe that she's like a very like strong, capable future leader every time that you hear that music and see her on a dragon or see her walking through the castle. And I just love it.
I agree. The music is really incredible. And we should also say the outfits in this episode are really incredible. I thought Rhaenyra's dragon riding outfit was like totally badass. Sonoya Mizuno's
cape dress.
Cape dress. You know, yeah, that was pretty incredible as well. I thought just as usual, a lot of the things were really excellent from a craft perspective. Mm-hmm. Kim, we got quite a number of messages last week from people who build models who are listening to Cast of Kings and saying, hey, I was building a model while listening to the episode and listening to Kim ruthlessly disparage model makers. But there's a lot of model making in this episode and references to models. And it's kind of like this male geek fantasy that plays out in this episode, right? That basically, like, I think for many young male geeks, of which I was one, but I've since gotten older and I am now wiser. You know, but there's this kind of like fantasy of like, oh, like, you know, the girl who really loves me will understand my extremely bizarre and esoteric hobbies.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what you see happen when Alicent hands him like the broken figurine or whatever, right? It's like, she's like, oh, she really
cares.
Gets me. She's like the manic pixie dream Hightower of the series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of, you know, it's just, I never expected to see like the nerd, like the kind of that male geek you know, fantasy play out in House of the Dragon, but here it is. Like with a king, no less, you know?
Yeah. So, I maintain I was not disparaging model maker miniature painters, IRL. I love hobbies of all ilk. I do paint by numbers. I'm a little nerd, but like the show, take it up with the writers, because the show, I feel like, continues to use the fact that Viserys is doing this to like show a certain level of like emotional immaturity that he has, where like
I agree. No, I know. I didn't mean to put you on the defensive, Kim.
That's okay. Yeah. Well, I genuinely feel bad. I don't like making fun of anybody who is real. I will make fun of these fake characters all I want. If you're listening to this and you're a real boy, a real man, a real any person who loves model making.
Yeah, yes. I don't
show
think
me
anyone...
your models. Tweet your models at me. I will tell you how amazing they are and how much work you went into them. It's so beautiful.
Let me read some final comments from listeners here who are listening to this space live. Kyle writes, so far in the first two episodes, I'm enjoying the dialogue is more straightforward and showing that this world hasn't become jaded yet. The earnestness of the characters' feelings and statements is really nice and contrasted against the schemers, Otto and Daemon. It is true that King Viserys is a fairly earnest king. You know, like he is in general trying to do the right thing, and he's not disgusting, and he's not cynical, I would argue, yet.
Yeah.
And so that's nice to see. What else? Kyle writes, another different Kyle. Kyle A writes, I love how different the dragons are from each other in their design and personality. Caraxes sounds unlike any dragon I've ever heard. I love how this makes these dragons also differ from Dany's dragons, end quote. Do you notice these dragon differences, Kim?
Yeah, for sure. I believe, I'm going to cheat and Google real fast. I'm pretty sure that the nickname for Caraxes is Bloodworm, spelled W-Y-R-M. Love that. It's very metal. Yeah, Caraxes is like almost like snake-like, like has this really like thin sort of like wriggly like core body that I love. Like the way that he sort of like skulks over things, I think is really cool, versus then when you see Rhaenyra fly in. Syrax is a little bit more similarly shaped to the way that Dany's dragons were. Yeah, I love that. Their coloring was like a little bit different, and it was just like, again, like a really cool reminder of like just how powerful the Targaryens are when they are also dragon riders, which isn't the case for every single Targaryen. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, Kim, really enjoyed talking with you about the episode. Could talk with you for a much longer period of time, but
that's for tomorrow.
That's for tomorrow. Early morning, we're going to hop on and talk about House of the Dragon episode 2 on a Cast of Kings podcast. So hope you've enjoyed tuning into this Twitter space. Let us know what you think. A lot of people are going to be listening to a recording of this. Let us know what you think. Should we keep doing these? I think it's fun to have like a quick reaction and then kind of think about it and then like have a more fully formed series of thoughts the next day. But would love to hear if people have any feedback. Anyway, Kim, thanks so much for trying with this with me, and hope you have a good night, and I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Sweet. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
Bye.